Welcome to the podcast!
Come be part of the conversations that happen around my kitchen table.
He's John Brannion, and he's been a stand-up comic for more than 30 years.
She's Amanda McKinney, and she's been my daughter for her whole life.
Our family believes laughter is a gift from God. We often discover it while discussing culture, faith, and family.
So go ahead and pull up a chair, neighbor. Can I call you Carl? There's plenty of room here for you.
Look at my microphone. You see it?
What?
You see my microphone slowly
drifting? Yeah, we've talked about that before. Your microphone
right at the table.
Is weak. What's up? Carl, thanks for joining us around the table. We did an auction yesterday. I did an auction yesterday. I was asked to be an auctioneer at the Art and Bloom thing for the Christian school. And it was easily the easiest show that I have done.
One of the things they say a lot at Acacia is, and everywhere else where you've heard this cliche, because it's a good one, many hands
make light work.
And so they take that very seriously. And I don't know, there was probably 100 people that were breaking down things at the beginning, and then slowly people had to leave. But like, it was a big group of workers tearing down afterwards. And yeah, it can sometimes give you the impression that it's just really easy to be, you know, part of a community.
What are you trying to do? You're three. Do you want it to go up? Hello. Check. Okay.
He likes that.
Yes. Well, it, from my perspective, Carl, just they had the kids from the classes made art projects. And, you know, when I say art projects in school, you think of like macaroni glued to construction paper. But this was more
they made, like,
substantial. Yeah, they made windmills, and they made a concrete urn thing, like a planter, and
not an urn.
It's like an urn, but instead of it's, but like it's an, got plants in it instead of the instead ashes of dead people.
Right. It was a painted cross.
An urn isn't just a thing that you put dead people's ashes in. An urn
never heard that used in any other context.
Wondered what we were going to talk about, and we were going to talk about me using a word improperly.
Alternative uses for urns.
The point is that they made legitimate works of art that they were auctioning off. And then each of the classes got up and made a little presentation, a little short presentation, and talked about their art. And they had little rhyming poems, had little songs that they sang, and they were adorable. Mm-hmm. They were absolutely adorable. And they didn't really even need an auctioneer. My job was very small. And so I'm a guy who's used to holding a microphone. So they asked me, would your dad be, they didn't ask me, they asked
your
Mandy.
Dad would not be interested.
My dad would not be able to do it.
He's
because he's not alive anymore.
But I was trying to bring that back to the urn comment, and I couldn't do it fast.
He's in an urn. Yeah. they asked if Mandy's dad would be willing to do it, because I'm a guy who has some experience standing up in front of people, and it doesn't make me nervous, and I'm halfway competent to do it. But when I get up on stage, I am the show. And we were talking about how it was really kind of, it was a little weird, but it was wonderful. The fact that I didn't have to be the show. I was contributing, I was adding, but I was not responsible for everything that went on stage.
Right. It's weird because there's pros and cons to every system, and we're used to doing a lot of things all by ourselves.
Right.
Especially with a small business, with our own podcast, we produce this and edit it, and we are our own people, and yes. So we always have to do everything
in-house. We edit all of our own
in-house.
Video.
And so it's weird.
Build our website.
Like, to include others, or to actually rather to be included with a project that is, you know, spearheaded by others. And so, yeah, it's like, would you rather have the stress and the headache while also feeling a little bit more powerful / accomplished / like, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that good stuff that can come from kind of handling things yourself. Like if I'm throwing a birthday party for my kids here at home,
right.
like 90% of that's going to fall squarely on my shoulders.
Right.
But then at the end of the day, I go to bed very tired and, you know, satisfied in a day's work. This was, it's a little bit more tempting to feel useless, maybe is the word, or it's tempting to
I didn't feel useless, but I definitely felt like, I felt like it was easy. I felt like
am I pulling enough weight here?
Right. Contributing
yes.
much. I'm yes. just up there. I have a few one-liners mm-hmm. that I can throw out. You know, I can get a laugh here or there. But in terms of, I don't have great skill as an auctioneer, the way auctioneering is genuinely thought to happen. And so, yeah, I felt like I was up there with Rob Hoshaw, the principal, and the
I think
mastermind, and he did a lot.
Your normal auctioneer is, their gift is efficiency. Like they're getting through a bunch of things really fast. And with you being slower, I think it helped the overall prices that we were getting.
Luke's an encourager.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
to help me feel better.
To be fair, I was talking to him about this on the way home from church today and explaining what my perspective was, which was between you and Rob, that he is a whole lot more analytical. He's a numbers guy, he's an engineer, or he was prior right. to becoming the headmaster. Yep. And
he had the whole night organized. That was the other thing. He gave me a list of what the classes, what the order was, what the order of operation was.
See,
I don't have any of that. When I'm doing the show all by myself, it's like I have that to do all
screen,
that stuff.
Or the slideshow, he always does his own slideshows, and yep. he always he handles them too. Like he actually has the controller in his hand right. and everything.
There was audio. There was musical intros and outros and cues, but I didn't do any of that.
Yeah, he does that himself. So there's two different skill sets that are available there, and for what you were required, you accomplished that. It's like they wanted somebody to be a little bit lighthearted, somebody who could make observations, who could be in the moment for what was happening socially, so that somebody, while somebody else was paying attention to what was happening monetarily, like mm-hmm. financially. And I think with a little bit more practice, that will feel more natural and maybe even more important, if that's the word I'm looking for. But like, for me, it's hard to not feel like I'm dead weight, or to feel like I'm right. actually slowing things down, because it's like, man, so many things are happening right now. And all I'm doing is, you know, cutting down these zip ties and putting away these scissors and maybe running a vacuum in this corner over here. But I'm part of a machine that managed to get that church clean in like an hour and a half right. afterwards.
Right.
The whole church.
I didn't do any of that either.
Well, you didn't. But like, you would have felt weird.
I really
there
didn't
too.
Do very much.
Because
yesterday.
If you had
That's
offered, people yeah. would have given you some kind of a job, but it really would have been like small things. Like Luke was there, and he, if you literally itemized the things we did, if you just put them in a list, it'd be like, oh, you spent an hour and a half doing those like four things.
Little things. Yeah.
But everybody did four things. And so then that ended up working. And so that's the idea behind many hands make light work. Yeah. But like when you're doing light work, right. having been used to carrying a pretty heavy load.
All I hear is you belittling what John and I did.
And what I did. What I did too.
That's how I am going to take it.
He literally like ran a drill. Didn't you? Didn't you like disassemble something?
I held things that were being disassembled.
All right. And
that's even less important.
And he dumped a cooler full of ice. I saw did. Him do that. So like that sort of thing sounds trivial until you realize, well, somebody would have had to do that right. and everything else.
And everything else, right. And that's what we were talking about yeah. this afternoon, was that there's a lost, and I'm speaking for myself, that there's a lost sense of importance and a sense of community in everybody being able to do a thing that they're able to do. You know, there's so many things that, so many times people said, oh, I could never do what you do. I could never do what you do. And what they mean is they can never get up on stage for an hour and be the sole source of entertainment for right. a room full of strangers. And that's true. But there are so many other things that go into not just, well, like last night, so many things
yeah.
that had to be done.
Moving parts.
That a lot of people could have done. Anybody could have done it. And that's what makes it so, cool. And that's what makes it so important, is that everybody is working to their skill level. I'm working to my skill level when I hold a microphone and when I act as sort of an MC at something like that. That's within my skill set.
Like well within your capacity.
Right. To feel and so somebody who dumps ice, it's not, they're still working within their skill set. They're still doing a thing that they're competent and comfortable to do.
Well, the kids, like it's a classical school. And so this was not the kids' first time on stage either. They regularly get up and recite.
And you can tell.
And you can tell. You can tell. But that's what I was going to say. All of the children from kindergarten all the way up to seventh and eighth did something, but it was still age appropriate in that like the kindergartners had each memorized a phrase and they took turns saying their phrase. And when you put all of the phrases together, it made the complete pitch, you know, and then they all together at the end, they said, and bid high and bid often. So that was the kindergartners doing their contribution. Well, they practiced. I saw them practice at least twice that week. The whole school actually assembled to do a quick run through of all of their parts. Right. And so that whole program was an example
was
of
rehearsed.
Everybody doing a phrase, or if you were a seventh and eighth grader, you got all the way up to like a short paragraph that you would recite. And everybody knew what their part was and they had rehearsed it several times. And so, yeah, if you were to just like list what is it that this little five-year-old actually did? Well, he was put into a costume by his teacher and then
to say a sentence.
Sent on stage at the appropriate time. He had no idea what that appropriate time was. He just waited for him to be pointed at. And then, yeah, he said this phrase, part of a sentence, that he knew he was going to be saying. And if you wrote those words down, it wouldn't even take up the entire line on your paper. But it all worked together.
That was his part.
Right. Yeah, it all worked together. So,
right. And it's, and I'm saying for me personally, I tend to forget that, I tend to forget about where, I want to take all of it on myself. I just want to handle all of it. Well, I get nervous when I go, when I start to hand out things to other people. And it's like, you know what, just let me do all of it. You just stay out of my way and let me do all of it. That's the way stand-ups operate.
Well, there are pros to that approach, too. Yeah. I mean, I tell people when they call and they want somebody to come out and help them with their event. I'm like, you know, the great thing about having a comedian specifically, he's not like a band. You don't have to have multiple people with him.
He is not talented.
There's not tons of equipment. You don't have to have the amps and the mics and all of it. Just one microphone and I will provide the one person who will make sure that everybody stays laughing.
Sound check takes 30 seconds.
Yeah, it really does. He doesn't even have intro music. You could add some if you wanted.
Not anymore. He doesn't. You know why?
Because it was too complicated.
It's too complicated.
Yeah, it was too hard to get
people
to
do. I used to have sound cues and intro music and all that. Nope, I ditched it all because I can't control it. Yep. So,
but it also fits nicely into other people's programs. So when they want to plug you into something like this fundraiser last night, you can fit fairly seamlessly. And I do think that I tend to downplay what the actual purpose of the role might have been. And if the purpose was to have a local talent, a guy who's right here in our own hometown, whose own grandkids go to this school.
Right.
And we know that he has held a microphone many times. He's comfortable making, you know, some witty remarks. And he's also an extra pair of eyes to watch for people bidding. Well, then you did that.
I did that.
You check all those boxes.
I did. I have eyes and grandchildren that go to that school. And I live locally. Yes, local those guy. Are all qualifications that
he
I have.
He pitched the three pigs. He mentioned.
I didn't. Rob did.
Right. He mentioned that you had been up there.
Yeah.
Like a decade ago doing your three pigs.
So it was them. It was nice. It was refreshing. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun. I settled into it and I realized.
And I ate Greek food.
I realized after the first class, hang on a second. I realized after the first class, it's like, oh, this is going to be even easier than I thought. I knew it was going to be easy because I saw what the program was going to be. But after the first kids, after the first class got up there and went into their pitch, it's like, man, this is going to be downhill. I don't have to do anything except just be in the moment and comment on what's going on. And that'll be it. And she ate Greek food.
Yeah, and Indian food, because all the classes had their own country, and so you did a world tour for the open house portion before the auction, and you went to each classroom to find out what they had been learning this year, And everybody provided food from their country.
And you can't buy happiness.
But you can buy gyros. And I liked it. I had never had a gyro before. And then spanakopita, that is what I believe that spinach thing was. And then baklava is the dessert, right?
I don't know what the spinach thing was called.
That's spanakopita, if that was not baklava. So if baklava is a dessert, then yes. That little triangle thing with the pita stuffed with garlicky spinach, it was really good. And I was like, yeah, what's not to like about this? Yeah, both.
Well, there's garlic and spinach for two.
My kids didn't like it, but
there's that. But yeah, it was fun. It was a good show, and it was an enjoyable experience. And that was my takeaway. My takeaway is, you don't have to be in charge of everything. You don't have to be the whole
right.
You don't have to be the whole show.
Well, you can let your guard down a little bit when you have people who have passed the vibe check. When you've already done the vetting and you're like, oh, we have the same values. Like, I am very comfortable with the education standards that they have. I've been working with the teachers one-on-one all year so far and just really always been very pleased by what I've seen. Anytime there's been a hiccup or an obstacle, the way that it's tackled is very similar to how I would tackle the same problem in my own home or in my own homeschool. And so that makes it easier for me to say, okay, I guess I'm not needed at the same level here as I would be, you know, in an environment where I can't trust the team, you know. So once you find your team and once you are comfortable that, yes, we're headed in the same direction, because we were talking about yoking last time. These are people that I actually do think are equally yoked. And so now I can just kind of relax a little bit more and say, yeah, I'll just dump this box of ice, and, you know, because somebody else is handling what I would normally be
right.
required to do, because in a lot of settings, there is no one else to do it. Like, right. thankfully in this community, I think that there are at least a few people who are competent to do that.
Yeah. So. Well, there's a certain type of person who is, I'm just going to call them a leadership type.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to throw as broad a net out as possible. Leadership types sometimes, not always, but sometimes they do struggle with doing things that aren't leadership roles, you know,
yeah.
that you feel like, well, why am I even here? You know, why am I wasted on this trivial, why am I wasted on dumping ice? You know, when they could get anybody to do that. And, but there's something to...
Is this enough? Like, is this even what's necessary right now?
And so a leadership type, a person who's a leader goes, why am I the one stacking chairs when there's other more leadership type things that need to be done and I should be doing them? And so it's like good to be reminded.
I needed to move a shelf, this standing bookcase, and this guy was like, I don't think I can. But he had just had surgery. But it's one of those things where you're ducking your responsibility because, you know.
Because that's what God needs from you? Is that what you're...
I mean, I thought that he should have showed up when I needed him, you know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Back surgery, smack surgery.
He's not much of a leader, is he?
No, he's never going to get far.
I texted Ken Kington, my comedian buddy, after he had open heart surgery. He just got home from having open heart surgery. I texted him and said, hey, dude, I need somebody to help me move a piano up to the attic. So can you help me out?
That's what comedians do for each other when they're...
That's how we show sympathy.
When they're hyped up on pain drugs. And, very sore.
I think I called him a lazy something or other, too, when he said he couldn't.
Yeah. Well...
See if I help you.
Well, yes, to your point, it's very nice to be in an environment where there are other leaders. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
It's nice because I feel like multiple times now, you know, there have been people, different characters who've proven themselves capable. And it's like, oh, my goodness. Yes. Thank you. I'm willing still to stand up and take on more as people say it's needed.
Right.
But like knowing that there are others there and like things are not going to completely fall apart if I do. like it's not all depending on me. Not even a right. fraction of it really feels like it's.
Well, and that's really what it is that motivates me. If I'm going to be completely honest, is it's a lack of trust.
Yeah,
it's the fact that if I don't handle this, it's going to fall apart. It won't be done correctly.
Yeah,
if I don't manage. I'm talking about when I'm doing shows. If I don't manage every aspect of this show, it's going to get messed up.
In this case, this is their 14th or 15th year in a row of doing this, and so that helps.
Well, but this was new.
We did not reach the goal funding, though.
Yeah.
So I thought you should have taken it more drastic and start, like, if we don't get another 1,000 in the next 10 minutes, we're expelling one student and then two students.
Yeah.
And then three students.
They did not.
We are going to get under budget somehow.
But it is a well-oiled machine, but that's not usually the institutions that we're drawn to. Like, our family, for whatever reason, tends to end up in, like, small, tiny churches that have either just had a big split or, like, you know, just has a small congregation. Or
there's, like, a lot of bitterness.
Nonprofit organizations that are, like, barely off the ground.
Barely on life support.
Or we've got, I was thinking about the PAL organization, which I think we talked about, the Police Athletic League here in Kokomo, which is great for what it's for, and I knew what I was signing up for.
We like to be in the center of mayhem.
But, like, as soon as we joined Tabby, whose kid had never even played soccer before, was asked to coach and did a great job, which is how this always happens. We keep being, like, immediately promoted to a higher level.
Show yourself to be leadership, and then you immediately become leadership.
And then she was yelled at by a random parent during a game. It was heated, and it was very creepy, scary for her. And so, like, that's the sort of situations we're used to having to suddenly manage. Like, we're being thrown into we thought we were just signing up Marcy
to play soccer.
Yeah, to be on a short little 6-week program list, you know. And suddenly Tabby's managing the emotions of a grown man who's screaming at her on the field, you know. It's like
at a youth league soccer.
And there's nobody to ask. It's not like she can then turn around and ask the coach, because lo and behold, she managed to become that.
Right.
And
just to give you an idea of how small time this is, Carl, there was what, like, three teams maybe? Two or three teams?
At each age level, there were three teams.
So at that level. So it's not like there were dozens of teams and all kinds of moving parts. The kids literally played the same teams, like,
every weekend.
Every week.
Yeah, every weekend they would play the same teams.
And you still had parents that were like, this is a bunch of time. It's like, calm down. This is just, this means nothing.
And Tabby was like, I don't know what to do, because there's only one guy who was the guy that hired me for this job, and he is only in the office part-time because he's got a real job too, and it's all volunteers, and we're all just doing this in our spare time.
Right.
And, like, what
there's
do you
no
do?
There's no rules. There's no handbook.
Yeah. It's everybody just does what seems right in their own eyes. That's what we've got going on out there. So it's weird to come into a place where they're inviting us to contribute what we have, but it's not literally taking all of us all at once, all of a sudden.
Right.
So,
It was great. It was great. If you get a chance to be involved in a project, Carl, that you don't have to head up, you don't have to mastermind, but you can go along and contribute some tiny little, what feels like insignificant part, then you should do it.
Because run a vacuum.
It's fun. Yeah, run a vacuum. Mm-hmm. Carpet shampooer. Pick up streamers.
Yep, just throw some trash away.
One of the pieces of art that we auctioned off was a cross, and it wasn't even a really big cross. It was maybe like a foot and a half.
I know what you're going to say.
Do you know what I'm going to say?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I went to move it back, and it tipped over, and
I'm
it
glad
landed
it
on my
pottery.
Foot, and it hurt like. It hurt. I mean, it was heavy.
I'm glad it wasn't ceramic.
Me too.
I didn't know it hit your foot because it sounded loud when it hit the ground.
Yeah, it fell over and it hit my foot. And I was also happy. I'm like, I just broke this. I just broke this thing. But no, it was substantial enough that it didn't break, but it did hurt.
Viva
la Mexico.
Watching you move it back. And seeing the fact that it was an adjustable stand that it flopped over while you were pulling it back, I was like, that is not going to be at the correct angle by the time he gets it back to the back of the stand.
And you know what? It wasn't.
And it wasn't. It was like straight up and down. And I was looking at it and waiting for it. And I was not disappointed. I mean, I was a little disappointed, but
so that's how unqualified I am to be the auctioneer at an art auction, and I still.
You should have just stuck to the auctioneer part and let whoever was supposed to move the cross just move the
cross. Well, that's the thing. It wasn't necessarily a job that had been assigned to somebody.
There you go, Carl. So if you're looking to get a part, to become part of this particular machine.
You can be the auction piece mover.
We still need a cross mover.
Yeah, we need somebody to move the artwork in such a way that it doesn't get destroyed before the auction's over. We need a person like that.
Okay. So while we've been talking, mm-hmm. I actually thought of something that we probably need to address.
We're not going to get to talk about the thing that I wanted to talk about, are we?
Well, we can, but I feel like this might be a good disclaimer for this because so often we're critical of different organizations and institutions. We've spent 25 minutes being pretty complimentary toward the classical school.
Yeah, very upbeat and positive.
And saying we appreciate all the work they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so it reminded me.
Don't get used to this, Carl.
Yeah, well, you're about to be critical again, I believe.
Oh, okay.
You know, critical of worship leaders, I believe, right? Mm. That's because you hate worship.
I am not going to be critical of them, but this guy is.
You hate worship and worshiping.
Yes,
and
I hate everything that has to do with music.
And anything that brings anyone joy.
Anybody that's happy about anything in church, I am opposed to it.
Feel guilty. Well, that's why I'm bringing it up, because I think that sometimes we can give the impression that there is this very, very narrow right way of doing things, and we don't know anybody who's actually accomplishing it.
Right.
And then there's this great big wide chasm into which pretty much everyone falls called
wrongness.
Yeah, wrong and incorrect.
Incorrect.
Yeah. So
right.
With that in mind, multiple times I've had people say to me, Tabby actually is one of them, my sister, who's like, I just don't want to do things wrong. But I'm getting to the point where I'm feeling like it's completely inevitable. And so I'm paralyzed. Like a lot of times people hear us talking about discernment and having good judgment and making decisions that are wise. And they're like, okay, but based on what you're telling me, like every Christian movie, every Christian song, every church, every organization is unsafe. And all of these things that I would have considered good decisions up till I heard you people talking about it. You're right. Now telling me I can't make that decision. Right. So I just feel like I want to address that.
What's the disclaimer? I thought you were going to disclaim something.
Well, my disclaimer is that I was thinking about it this week. I was like, I can understand why people would be, afraid to make any moves now. Cause it's like, oh man, this seems right. But I know the Bible says there's a way that seems right to a man. And then
right.
it ends up leading to death.
They just die.
And turns out that every time I listen to the comedian next door,
they're always grinding on everything.
That way that I thought was right ends up leading to death.
We're like we're like Mikey from the Life cereal. This dates me, but like you guys don't remember that commercial. There's a little kid for Life cereal. What's this? Some cereal supposed to be good for you. You gonna try it? I'm not gonna try it. Let's get Mikey. Yeah.
He won't eat anything.
No, oh, he won't eat it. He hates everything.
That's right, right, right. Right.
Plus he won't eat it. He hates everything. Yeah. And then he likes it. Hey, Mikey. And then I got the whole commercial memorized. Right? This kid was eating that cereal.
Clearly.
He's like in his 50s now, I think. Mikey's like not that much younger than me.
Look that up, Luke. We need somebody to look that up. That's a good.
The Life cereal
how
commercial.
How old is Mikey?
How old is that, Mikey from the Life
cereal? That's a good job for you.
But yeah, that's us. We're like Mikey. It's like, well, let's get them to talk about it on the podcast. They won't like it. They hate everything.
They hate everything. Wait a minute. They like it. Yes, I'm going to have a Mikey moment here.
They hate everything.
I was thinking this week about what advice would I give to somebody who's like, I hear what you're saying, and I tend to agree with you too, but like, I'm now afraid to make a move because I don't want to make the wrong one. Mm-hmm. And specifically, I was asked this week about churches and church recommendations in a state I don't even live in. Mm. And this person was like, well, I know that you guys have said before that like, that there's something wrong with Pentecostals and that evangelism is wrong mm-hmm. or evangelicalism. Yeah. And I was like,
there's something wrong with everything.
Yeah. And Catholicism and you know, things like that. There's something wrong with all of them.
Yep. They're all flawed.
And so I thought to myself, what does this person and what does anyone who's in that same position need to hear right now? And I realized, oh, I really want them to know some of the good lessons that I've learned from having been in a Baptist school when I was a kid.
Yeah, in a flawed institution.
Yes. The reason that I know what Baptists teach generally that I disagree with is because I spent 5 years in a Baptist school learning a whole bunch of stuff that I still believe.
Of the culture and community.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm saying, oh, you need to avoid Baptist churches. I'm saying if and when you visit one, and you should, these are some of the tendencies you may find. Oh, they love their potlucks. They are curiously not in favor of baptism for usually salvation comes before baptism.
Yeah, this is a good point. This is a good point. Whenever we are critical of things, the tendency in the culture, the message you get from the culture is you should have nothing to do with that thing. And particularly since we've spent a couple of weeks now talking about being unequally yoked and not associating with unbelievers.
Yep. I've scared people. You've scared people.
I have frightened people. And that's actually the not associating with unbelievers is not my idea, just to be clear. That's God that says that. I don't really care if you associate with unbelievers or not, but God has a problem with it. So that being said, if you are associating with fellow believers, these are people who identify as believers, and for all intents and purposes, as far as you can tell, they are sincere believers. They're not deliberately pulling the wool over your eyes. Yes,
Luke has a question.
He has a comment about Mikey, I think.
Little Mikey is 56 years old.
I'm 58. What'd I say?
He lives in New York with his 3 children and wife.
His children are probably grown.
I wonder if he likes them.
He was in the movie The Notebook.
Oh.
Yeah. And Speed 2.
That's a very strange
resume. He still enjoys Life cereal.
Mm-hmm. So, have you ever had Life cereal?
I like Cinnamon Life.
It's
really good.
It's pretty tasty, actually.
I wonder if they keep him on retainer to say that. Like, if they keep that in his bio for a small fee, he still likes Life cereal.
It was iconic at the time. When that commercial came out, it was a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah. Well, but anyway.
Well done. Well done, Life cereal.
So you're saying people.
So what I'm saying is that.
If they seem to be Christians.
Well, I'm echoing your sentiment, basically, that there is good things that come from continuing to associate with believers, with being part of the church, being part of a church congregation, even though you have. A difference of opinion about things, even though you may have different
those differences of opinion
views.
Come from the interactions, and that's what I realized this week. It clarified for me that I wouldn't know what I don't like about you know certain Baptist teachings, except that I interact with and fellowship with Baptists.
Despite the fact that you didn't like that particular
And there's something,
point.
Well, I did, it's not even that I didn't, like at first, when we first started going to that school, I was, 13 years old.
Right.
And so I didn't dislike it. It's not like I disagreed and then went and became a part of this congregation anyway, or despite the disagreement. I didn't know going into it what we agreed about or what we disagreed about. But it's actually, there's good that comes from the disagreement itself.
Right.
And so if I've given the impression that the disagreement should be avoided, that is not what I intended. When I talk about areas that I may disagree with a Catholic on something, the point is not, I'm warning you people to stay away from Catholics. If you don't want to be wrong, you should just avoid Catholics.
That was the point that, the culture is very much now about cutting off toxicity, anybody that's abusive, anybody that's oppressive, anybody that is dogmatic, anybody that is a fundamentalist. These people need to be cut from your life. And so we are not advocating kicking people out of your life because you disagree with them or have a different point, particularly if they're people who are members of your actual family and your church family, that you don't need to separate yourself from people who are on the same team as you.
You shouldn't listen to this podcast trying to figure out what's true and what's false so that you can avoid everything false and always agree with everything true.
Correct.
Like, I want you to go to the Baptist church and a Catholic mass sometime, mm-hmm. and you should try going to a Pentecostal church. I was at a church for that MLK service a few weeks ago, and I talked about that. Mm-hmm. It was an inner city, all black church,
right.
very gospel, very emotive. You know, it's the kind where people talk back constantly to the pastor. Go to those Amen. Churches. Go and put yourself in the environment, and then you'll have more context for what I'm talking about.
Right.
And then if you want some help unpacking or processing what you saw, then I have some thoughts, because I've also been to those churches.
Right.
And one of the things I said, and this was kind of my disclaimer for today, one of the things that I realized this week.
I wondered if we were going to get around to the disclaimer.
I would rather people go and convert to Catholicism and become a member of the Catholic Church, if it means submitting to the authority that, like, agreeing to be under that authority, because I think good comes from that situation, more good than being a solo person who sits at home at home on the couch on Sunday morning
and worries about going to the wrong
and
church.
And doesn't want to go to the wrong church. Yeah, right. Because I think that God is prepared to take you from where you are to where he wants you to be if you just show him you're ready to be with other believers.
Right.
And I promise
you. If you're searching, you'll find him.
Yes. And I promise you that they will be flawed. I'm trying to warn you about the types of flaws you are likely to run into, but not because I want you to avoid them, because I want you to recognize them when you see them and be able to thank God for them. Because if you like what I say, or if you tend to agree with the things that I say on this podcast, all you're doing is just appreciating the result of going to Catholic
going
mass.
To a bunch of flawed places.
Going right. to a Pentecostal church.
Right.
When Luke and I first started dating, his family was regular attender at probably the most Pentecostal church we have in this town. Mm-hmm. And, you
Hallelujah.
Know, speaking in tongues, they were big gifts of the spirit people. Yep. And he and I talked in high school about what is the difference between this and our beloved Baptist school mm-hmm. versus the Church of Christ that my folks belong to, the independent Christian.
The boring Church of Christ full of straight-laced.
How different is it? Like, what difference does it make? The Pentecostals would often challenge us as teenagers to raise our hands. Well, why wouldn't you raise your hands in worship? Are you ashamed of, you know, Christ? Are you ashamed to show God that you love him? I mean, is that a possibility?
That will actually make a segue for...
Yes.
Because we actually had a worship leader... at our boring straight-laced Church of Christ years ago, who would do that. It's like, put your hands in the air. Don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed.
Show God that you love him.
Yeah. The more demonstrative you were during the actual worship service, that was a proof supposedly of how much you loved Christ.
Right.
But the bells went off for me when that was going on, and I was an elder at the time, and I said, "This must not continue because it's not correct." But this is what happens with worship leaders.
Here we go. This is the part where we warn you about something that we have noticed.
This is where we talk to you, and it's going to sound negative, and you're going to go, oh, these people hate worship leaders.
I shouldn't go to any church because I'm probably going to end up in a church where they sing these songs.
Right. Any church with a worship leader is probably off track, and Brandon hates it.
Yeah.
It's not true.
That's not what we're saying.
We don't have enough time to go through all of my criticisms with modern worship, but this was a video that I found that Monique Duchon actually was the one who posted this.
I don't know who. Oh, Duchon.
Yeah.
Not Duchon.
From
the Monique. Biblical. Wait. Center for Biblical
Unity. Research.
Isn't it?
Center for Biblical Bibles.
Is it Unity? Yeah.
I think it's Unity. Yeah.
Anyway, it's Monique.
She is all about critical race theory and why we should not succumb to it.
Yeah. So, anyway. And this was a video from Elijah Chanak, Chanak. Anyway, I'm trying to give credit. It's a preacher. This might be Elijah. And he's basically talking about how...
Are you sure he's a preacher and not a worship leader?
Well, he's wearing a robe.
He's critical of worship leaders.
You're going to look at a guy like that and say he's not a preacher?
He uses the word hermeneutics.
He does say hermeneutic
and all sorts of stuff. The short version of this is that he is talking about how if you want to get a microphone in church, the easiest way to do it is to become a worship pastor. Because the worship pastors basically are not vetted. They don't have to learn anything about hermeneutics. They don't have to be trained. They don't have to have any studying. They don't have to have there's no official process that you have to go through. They hand you a microphone. All you have to have is talent. You have to be able to sing, and they give you a microphone. And we have actually talked about this a few times.
Right.
That we take the most talented people, not necessarily the most wise people, and put them on stage. And this is where, again, we're running out of time, but this is where people are going to go, so what you're saying is that worship leaders don't know Jesus. And I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying that I agree with him that in my experience, it has been when there's especially weak theology, sometimes there's weak theology in the pulpit and in the worship leader. Mm. It doesn't necessarily mean that the pastor is theologically sound, but worship leaders have a tendency to be focused on the music and specifically the rhythm, the style, and the sort of emotions that the music invokes.
Yeah.
And they don't pay any attention to the actual theology in the lyrics, among other things. Also, they will segue sometimes in between songs and offer little devotional-esque sort of mini-sermons that can be pretty atrocious theologically and doctrinally. And so that's all this guy is saying. He's saying that there are worship leaders who have more followers than the pastors, and that is a problem because we have people who are not qualified to be teaching, but they're given a microphone and they're teaching, even though that isn't necessarily what they're supposed to be doing. And so that's all he's saying. And I agree with that. But by golly, there were some people who are commenting. All I did was repost this video. I didn't make any comment on it. And there's a bunch of people who are saying, yep, this is a problem. If one knows how to repeat lyrics and have a combination of a good voice and soothing instruments, then you get Bethel or Hillsong type music. Watch out for what we fill our minds with. And that's basically what the pastor's saying. But then there's a person here who says, this is me looking through the Bible trying to find where it says you have to be versed in all those fancy things before you can lead. And... You have to, this is the people that I want to talk to, because are you saying that you don't need to have any sort of qualifications? Are you saying that leadership is a thing? What should you have to have in order to be a leader, in order to get a microphone?
Did you look in the Bible and find a verse that said absolutely anybody should be given a microphone? Because you're behaving as if that's what you read there.
Right.
And I haven't found that verse yet.
Well, but the argument is that, and I've heard that argument multiple times. Oh, you're saying you have to go to Bible college? You're saying you have to have a degree? You're saying you have to have it? It's like, I'm the last person to say you have to go to Bible college to get a degree. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I'm saying that in order to have a microphone and to talk to people, especially in a church environment, then yes, you should know what you're talking about. You should be checked out by the leadership. Yeah, you should be proven that you know what you're talking about, because otherwise you get heresy. That's how it starts. And the people who are out in the congregation are also not discerning if they're listening to this guy and go, well, you know, the worship pastor said this and this. It's like, right, does anybody in this church, does anybody have to know anything in a church? Or can anybody just talk and say whatever they want to say? I think that...
What do you think? What do you think?
Well,
As we talk into the microphones that we bought ourselves.
Right.
Here, listen to us.
Well, there's a difference between handing somebody a microphone and telling them to lead worship, and then them... If all they're doing is singing, we're still going to have a problem with it because it's going to be Hillsong and Bethel. But that would be better. If all they did was sang, then that would be better. But they don't. And they're the guy's right. They amass followers and they become popular.
Yep.
Why? Not because of what they're teaching. Not because of the truth.
Well,
but
yes.
Because of the performance.
It's because of what they're teaching, but it's not because it agrees with Scripture. We were just talking this morning about the incident at Bethel with the toddler that died and they tried to raise from the dead. And
That was 5 years ago.
It was almost 5 years ago. It'll be 5 years this fall. Mm-hmm. And the mother of that child is and was and is a worship minister at Bethel.
Right.
Not only did she not lose her position there during this whole fiasco, but she gained even more followers on Instagram.
Right.
People who are still able to go in and check on her and find out what she's up to. And, you know, she still posts regularly about this journey of loss and, you know,
right.
She, anytime she wants to, she can speak about death. She can speak about healing. She can speak about faith. She can speak about any of those anytime.
Right. She has a microphone anytime she wants.
Yes. And if she wants to relay it to something in scripture, nobody above her, there's no authority over her that can say, hey, that's actually incorrect, or that's out of line, or that's, you know, doctrinally unsound, or it's heretical. Like, the question is always, says who?
Right.
You know, who are you? And you're not allowed to point out that, like, she hasn't answered that question either. Right. Like, it's not a situation where everyone has authority unless proven otherwise. It's a situation where you don't have authority unless you prove that you have it.
Right.
And I think when you declare you're going to raise your kid from the dead and you don't, you have lost all authority. You have no credibility to be a teacher of these spiritual concepts.
Right.
But
well, that's what we talked about today, that they issued a statement at Bethel. That something, I don't have it in front of me, but it was something along the lines of our joy, even though Olive, even though Olive wasn't raised from the dead
here bodily,
where our joy is knowing that she is with God in heaven.
We don't get to witness the miracle of her resurrection now, but we do know that she was still nonetheless raised.
Right. And my comment to the congregation today was, is anybody going to be impressed by that after they made this foolish spectacle that was international? I mean, it got headlines for a couple of weeks that they're praying to have this girl raised from the dead to show their tremendous faith in God. And it didn't happen. And so Now they're going to go, well, we're confident though, now that she's living with God in heaven. It's like, who's going to be impressed by that? Why is the church even still functioning? How does it continue to go on and produce music and to say, and to find an audience to preach to? Well, because there's a bunch of people who are going to say, well, why should I go through the Bible to try to find that somebody has to have some sort of special qualifications to teach?
Shouldn't we want Christians to have lots of followers?
Yeah. Shouldn't we want to just follow people because they're good singers? I mean, what's your problem? This guy's got a great voice and he can play the piano. You know, what more do you want? What else does he have to have?
Yeah. So with all of that said, I know that there are people who maybe are just now starting their foray into asking good questions, holding other Christians accountable, being discerning, trying to find the truth. And they're going, oh no, I might have been one of those people who continued to go to that church anyway, even after they unsuccessfully conducted a seance for several weeks. Like, I might be one who would not know that I needed to leave at that point.
Right.
And so, what do I do? Like, I'm paralyzed. I'm afraid that I'm going to make the wrong decision. And so we're over time right now. But like, the one thing I wanted to say that occurred to me this week was, God is going to hold us accountable for what we know.
What we know, right.
What we know, not for what we don't know. And I would not have been able to tell you the sorts of things that we would be talking about on this podcast when I was a 15-year-old, you know, going to a Baptist school and dating a Pentecostal boy.
Like, Pentecostal redhead.
I would not have been able to contribute in the same way that I do now to these conversations because I hadn't done the living yet and I hadn't experienced it. But I can tell you with certainty that even at that tender young age, I did know that I wanted the truth. I knew that I wanted to be correct. And if somebody had said, this is wrong and this is why, I would have been interested in knowing more about that. Like, I wanted to be righteous, and I asked God to show me the path. Just tell me what I need to do, and then I will do that thing. And I think it starts there. I think just taking one step in the direction that seems like it's probably right now, it's correct, it's been lit up just enough, that you can take that one step. God will take you places that way that I certainly cannot predict, and you probably can't even predict either from your current vantage point. No. But if you know that you're supposed to be in fellowship with other Christians, and you know that you're not supposed to be unequally yoked with non-Christians, okay, take a look at the people who are professing atheists in your life and go, I need to be spending less time with them. Right. And go where somebody is at least saying, we love Jesus and we love his word, we love God's word, and we want to glorify him. Go hang out with those people.
Right.
And you will find disagreements as you go that I can't even warn you about all of them.
They may have a terrible worship leader.
It probably will. The odds are good.
The odds are pretty good. It'll be a terrible worship leader.
They probably sing Bethel songs. But this is what I said to you this week. I said it is better for people to have the opportunity to go and authentically, I hate that word, but to in good faith, sing songs that were created by Bethel because they genuinely believe that that's going to please the Lord in that moment. I think it does. It's better than trying to go it alone or reject the fact that you're supposed to be meeting
right.
with believers.
It doesn't do you any good to feel guilty about things that you've done or been doing out of ignorance for a number of years. There's no reason for that. That's the reason that Christ died, was to take away that shame and that guilt. So you don't have to hang on to that. Just put it aside, get rid of the shame. You know, it's all under Christ's blood. And then go out and
obey.
Go out and obey. Become fellowship with other flawed believers and work through this stuff. Ask these questions. Hey, what about our worship leader? What about the way we serve communion? What about you can talk about all of it and disagree.
Luke, give me the final word.
Yeah.
I don't have one.
Thanks for visiting the Comedian's House. If you want to spend more time with our family, you can follow John Branion on YouTube and Facebook. Also, email nextdoor@johnbranion.com with your comments and questions. We'll see you next time.